Conference muted.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com. Today is Thursday, January 12th, 2012, our first call of the year. A very happy new year to all of you. Let me just make sure this call is clear to everybody. Just one second. Can everybody hear me fine, guys?
Yes.
Your voice is a little low. If you can speak a little louder, that will be great.
Okay, very good. I'll try. Thank you.
Thank you.
Conference muted.
Okay, so we have about 20 questions here. This call is being recorded, so anybody who does not want their voice to be recorded should hang up now. Or you can also conceal your identity and just give a fictitious name if you ask a question. Just because you have participated in this call does not oblige you in any way to become our client, nor does it oblige us to become your lawyer. It's definitely just a community conference with the agenda being to provide as much information as we can based upon the facts that we have. That said, let me get started with the first question from Alec Sashka. This is a question posted on the forums. They've got their 485 pending for more than a year and 5 months. The papers were submitted to Nebraska Service Center, then they got transferred to the local office. So the question is, what do I do? I've tried everything. I've talked to the senator. The only thing I can recommend at this point of time is to contact the ombudsman's office, the ombudsman, USCIS ombudsman. So if you do a search for the word USCIS space ombudsman, O, M as in Mary, B as in boy, U, D as in doctor, ombud, S as in Sam, M-A-N, ombudsman. By the way, the word ombudsman is the same thing in Hindi as Lokpal. A lot of you might be following Anna Hazare's campaign for a Lokpal. The idea is ombudsman's office is an office that helps you resolve problems with the government agencies. USCIS Ombudsman's Office has recently become effective. If you log in a complaint to their online system, they will be able to get you some information. Whether that help or not, it all depends. So go ahead and try that. Let's see how that works. Next question is Raj IMG. I'm currently on H-4, and Company A has filed H-1B, which just got approved. I also have an approved I-140 from Company B. However, Company B's earlier H-1B had been rejected. So what happened was we've got two companies, A and B. Through B, you have a green card approval, but the H-1B was earlier denied. Now, let me rephrase that, I-140 approval. But with Company A, you have an H-1B approval. So B has your I-140 approval, but their H-1B was denied earlier. A has your H-1B approval. So your question is, should I apply for AOS, EAD, AP with Company B? And the answer is yes. Can I file for myself, or should I continue with the lawyer? Lawyer, please. If I continue to work for Company A and our EAD comes in approximately 3 months, can I still continue working? Well, remember one thing. Just because an EAD is issued does not mean you have lost your H-1B. The only time you lose your H-1B is when you actually start using your EAD. And how do you do that? You take your EAD to the company that you're working for, and you say, here is my EAD. I want to prepare a new form I-9. So just the issuance of an EAD does not interfere with H-1 or H-4 status. Same for AP. Just because you've got an advance parole approval does not mean in any way you have interfered with your H-1, L-1, or any other status that you're on. Okay? Assuming number two is possible, can my spouse get back on H-1B later? Yes, they can. EAD to H-1B is possible, but you'll have to step outside USA, get an H-1B stamping, and come back. Okay? If my I-485 gets approved, and I get my EAD, if my I-45 gets approved, I get my EAD, does my H-1B still remain valid? No, of course not. If the green card is approved, there is no longer an H-1B. At what point do I absolutely have to join Company B? Well, you know, this is a very interesting question. Actually, you people may want to think about this very carefully. Guys, I'm going to lay out something which is an important concept. Anybody who has a green card filed through a future employer, remember this. Now, we are allowed to file green cards through future employers, and the requirement is that you should have the intention of joining the future employer, and the future employer should have the intention of having you come and join them. But once the 485 is filed after the I-140 approval, after 180 days, you can actually join any employer. You never have to join that future employer as long as the two jobs are similar. Very interesting concept. So for a future employer, you never have to join them if you take a similar job elsewhere after 180 days of 485 pending. Tricky situation is, what if my 485 gets approved before 180 days? I suggest you join them. How soon should you join them? You should join them within a commercially reasonable time. How much is that? No one knows. Month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe even 4 months. Okay? Let's see. What would you recommend that she do? Join the new company A or wait till EAD gets approved and join company B? Oh, I'm a little confused. 1 second. Can we continue using AP to travel back and forth to India and both come back and work on respective H-1Bs? Read the Cronin Memorandum, C-R-O-N-I-N. Cronin Memorandum says if somebody has a 485 pending and they are on H-1B and they travel on AP and come back to work for the same employer, they are still on H-1B. Okay? So that is not a problem. This part I don't understand. What do you recommend that she do? Join new company A or wait till EAD gets approved and join company B? This part I'm confused about. I'm not sure where your wife comes into this. Can my spouse get back to H-1B? I'm not sure how your spouse figures into this. I mean, I thought company A and company B were related only to you. If you're on the phone, let's talk about this once I'm done with the rest of the questions. I don't understand this issue about your spouse. Next question is from Anand GS. He says, recently dates became current. Applied for AOS EAD AP in November, biometrics done. Now what happened is, while working in Virginia in 2010, H-1B got extended and visa was stamped till Feb 2013, okay? Then I was working for a client in Maryland from Feb 2011 through July 2011. Applied for H-1B amendment. Now, I am noticing that all of this happened. You applied for your H-1 in your AOS in November 2011. Okay, then the H-1B amendment got denied. From August 2011, working for a client in New Jersey, but the new one was approved. So at the most, you are out of status between February through August, at the most, if there's a problem. So February, March, April, May, June, July, August. If it is less than 180 days, there should be no problem at all. If it is more than 180 days, there could be an issue, okay? Because that old H-1B amendment denial means that the period that you worked for the old employer could be considered to be out of status period. But, you know, I'm concerned about this whole case. You may want to have your lawyer think about this very carefully. It's not that ultimately there's going to be a problem, but I fear that the AOS can be declined because if USCIS wants to say that you've been out of status for more than 180 days, they could create a problem for you. Okay? Your lawyer says there is no problem. I'm not so sure. There could be an issue because The old H-1B amendment was denied, and if you worked for that client for more than 180 days, you're going to have a problem. On top of that, if there is a gap in status, USCIS can come in question and say, well, wait a minute, we should not have approved the second H-1B also. It gets tricky. It's not a simple answer. So I want you to get together with your lawyers very, very carefully. Ultimately, it's going to be okay. At the most, you have to step outside USA, come back using that same visa or get a new visa. That, too, is a tricky question. And then apply for 485 again. Ultimately, it'll be okay. It's not the end of the world. But it's something that should be figured out very carefully. And you should make contingency plans in case USCIS declines your 485. Then what you are going to do, make sure your H-1B is still alive. So, you know, just make contingency plans. I think ultimately we're not going to have a problem. Next question, F2L1. I've got an F2 visa stamp. Now they're going to apply for an L1 visa. What happens is when you apply for an L2 visa or an L1 visa or any visa, typically what is required under the consulate's own procedures is before they take on the application for a visa, they are supposed to cancel out all the pre-existing visas. As a practical matter, they don't. So when you apply for an L1, they should cancel your existing F2 visa, but usually they don't. So what will happen is if the L1 visa is declined, your F2 visa should still be good. If they have canceled it, you can always apply for the F2 again. Okay? And your one of the questions was, can they cancel F2 and give a 221G on the L1 and keep me waiting? Yes, they can. But you could always apply for an F2. Withdraw your L1 and apply for F2. Okay. Now let me look at the questions one by one. Is a regular L1 different from a blanket L1? Well, you know, that's a long answer. Generally speaking, merit-wise, there is no difference. I'm not in a managerial role. Which visa should I apply for? Well, there are two kinds of L1s, L1A and L1B. A is for managers and executives, and L1B is for specialized knowledge employees. These are those employees who have some special knowledge of the company's product, procedures, methodology, etc. So the idea is if you are an Oracle developer, you don't qualify for an L1B because Oracle is not a special software for a particular company. But let's say your company built a personnel management system using Oracle as the back end. Now the company has a specialized product. And if you were the senior engineer on the team who developed this product, you could qualify potentially for an L1B visa. How much time does it take to get the L1 visa from the date of the application? Well, if you're talking about the visa stamp, anywhere from a few days to a few months, depending upon how much information they ask for. Would the embassy cancel? Okay, I already answered that question. If my L1 is rejected, I answered that question. If I'm on L1 visa with employer A, could I get H-1B sponsor from employer B later? Yes. And start working with employer B after October? Yes. Certainly. If I'm on L1 visa with employer A as of December 2011, can I get it transferred to L1 visa with employer B? Yes, if employer B is part of the same group of companies. Remember, L1 requires that you must have worked for a member of a group of companies outside USA. So employer B can get an L1 for you only if they qualify as a member of those group of companies for whom you worked. Next question is Shazbel. I noticed that the visa bulletin for the past few months, EB2 has been moving pretty quickly. EB3 seems not to be affected. Could you please share your thoughts and comments? Sir, I have no idea. Or ma'am, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. We hear all kinds of conjectures and comments from various people who claim to know. But I think demands are unpredictable. You really cannot make any concrete judgments about what's going to happen. It looks like EB2 dates are moving quite well, and they should continue moving quite well as to EB3, it's impossible for me to predict. I had read on one of the news items posted on your website that there was a suggestion to make working on H4 permissible. No developments on that. Vijay underscore L1 says H1B petition. I'm a Canadian permanent resident. The visa got, the H1 got approved, but visa could not be obtained. The client could not wait, and they withdrew the offer. Now I have a B1, B2 business visa. A company in Michigan suggested that they have many clients for my skills, so they asked me to enter with tourist visa. Don't do that. Don't do that. It's a bad idea. If you want to enter in and you have the intention of either converting to H1B or to work on, you know, without the H1B, don't do that. It is better to redo the whole thing all over. See, what happens is if you enter USA claiming that, you know, you are going to enter USA for a short period of time on a tourist visa, and then you convert to an H-1B while you are within USA, the consulate can take very strong exception to that if you ever go outside USA. Now, if you say, look, I'm not going to go outside USA, I'm going to enter on B-1, B-2, and I am going to wait till I actually get my green card or advanced parole before I travel out, okay, you might avoid trouble with the consulate. But even USCIS can take that issue sometime, that you entered USA stating that you will be coming for a short visit, but you had a preconceived intention of staying here on H1, and therefore you lied to us. I would not advise you to take that path. Okay? My question, even though my visa was denied, is my petition still valid? If the H1 was not revoked and merely the visa was denied, I would suggest very strongly that the petition is still valid. But you will have to, I think you should get an H-1B visa done from the beginning, not enter USA on tourist visa and then try to convert it to H-1B. I think that's a bad idea. Next question, again from Vijay, on behalf of his friend. He's a Canadian citizen, wants to take up a job on TN. He wants to settle down in USA. Is it true that TN visa applicant cannot apply for green card? Well, here's the problem. There are basically two kinds of visas in this context. There are visas that definitely allow you to apply for a green card, H1, L1, H4, L2. There are visas, I think O is in that category also. There are visas that definitely do not allow you to apply for a green card. Student visa, F1, F2, J visas, tourist visas. These are some examples of those visas where you cannot do this. TN is not quite either one of the two. So if at the border the CBP asks you about your green card status and application and you say that you have filed for a green card, they could decline the TN. So the answer is yes, but what you do is typically you convert to an H-1B somewhere along the line, either during the green card processing. The timing can be decided with the consultation of your lawyer, and that way, you know, you don't have this problem. So it's not a big issue. It can be taken care of. Next question, SWE82, H1 approved while my H4 extension was pending. H4 expired September 30th, filed for H1 extension September 28th. Also got a job offer, applied for H1 September 28th. Okay. For current status, I mentioned H4 extension pending. Okay. My H1 is approved. Okay. Now, if your H1 is approved and you have an I-94 attached at the bottom, which means you've got your status as well, you must withdraw your H4. Don't worry about anything else. Withdraw your H4. It should not be a problem for 485. It should not be a problem for anything. If your H4 gets approved and you're working on H1, there is a school of thought that would say, well, now you have H4 status, not H1 status. Okay. Therefore, as soon as you find out that you have your H-1 approval with the I-94, immediately send in your withdrawal, FedEx the letter to USCIS. Next question is from Peacock Lover, who says, is it a good idea for me to file a second 485? So both he and his wife have independent green cards going. Well, let me tell you something. Here is an interesting thing that I have seen USCIS to be doing lately, last few months, or maybe a couple of years. Husband and wife have both filed 485. Husband is primary, wife is derivative. It turns out that wife is entitled to her green card earlier because her priority date is earlier. Even though she's a derivative, USCIS automatically makes her the primary and you the derivative. So they do this by themselves. You may not have to file second 485. I think what you can do is you can contact USCIS customer service and make them aware that you are entitled to your 485 approval by reversal of roles. And that can be done with existing 485s. Okay? So just follow this through. It should not be a problem. Don't be surprised if USCIS does it automatically. Can you predict roughly the approval chances in the next 6 months? I have no idea. Raj wants to know B1, B2. If a B1, B2 visa holder came to USA on June 1st on a B1 visa, that's valid only till June 11th. Will they be given 6 months or will they be given just 10 days? And the answer is they can be given 6 months, and they often are. It doesn't matter when your visa is expiring. CBP is not bound by the visa date. Visa is merely a permission to enter USA. The stay is decided by CBP. So as long as you have even 1 day valid on your visa, CBP can still give you 6 months, no problem. Okay? Next question is from Need QA Job. Problem is, husband and wife both filed N-400 for citizenship. Wife got her approval. Husband's case is still pending because he apparently had two A numbers. What do I do? What can I do about the delay? Well, you know, you can actually file a lawsuit against the government, but I would just be patient and follow it through the ombudsman's office, see if that helps. But there's not a whole lot else you can do. You already tried the senator office. Those are the things that you can do. Ultimately, if it becomes too long, you can always file a lawsuit. Next question, KNVS Madhav. Pending 485 case, priority date is May 2003 under EB2 category. Case is pending at TSC. They are saying that the I-140 was approved as a third preference. Well, it is quite obvious to me what you should do is file a form I-824. Actually, take it one step back. First of all, review your I-140 approval. See under which category was it approved. If I-140 was approved under EB2, take it to the ombudsman's office and say, look what they are doing to me. Okay? There is no need to schedule an appointment with me. It is quite obvious that this is what you should do. I don't think my consultation is going to help you any more than that, because we need to correct this error if they have it as an error. Two possibilities. Either they have misclassified as EB3, even though the case was approved under EB2. Then go to ombudsman's office. If they have misapproved the case under EB3 when it should have been approved under EB2, you may have to refile the I-140. Get the EB2 approval and make sure, you know, then automatically you should be able to get your EB2 approval right away. So follow up and find out where the error is, whether it is in the approval or in the classification at the local office, at the service center, okay? Next question is from Andrew GC. That name is very familiar. I've dealt with this gentleman several times, I'm sure. if a GC holder applies for permanent residency in another country, say Canada or Australia, is that automatically an abandonment of U.S. green card? No. No. As long as you're physically living in USA, U.S. authorities should not have any problem where you apply. I know that CBP has been giving people who have applied for Canadian permanent residence a hard time sometimes. They really should not be. Whatever they are doing is illegal. They should only be concerned about where you live. They should not be concerned where else you apply for permanent residence. So the answer is, apply wherever you like. Two, I know that people born in the U.S. can take citizenship to another country. But can a person who was naturalized as a U.S. citizen take citizenship of another country? Yes. Why not? As long as, no. See, you can double check. From what I remember, I looked into this issue a while back. As long as a part of taking the oath of naturalization of the other country, you are not required to renounce your U.S. citizenship. I don't think it should be a problem. But you can have this issue double-checked through your congressman's office. Okay? It's a good idea to get it double-checked what USCIS policy and stand on this thing is. Of course, you can spend a few thousand dollars on lawyers and have this issue researched, but why not get free advice? That's the way I look at it. Okay. Now, the question from Super Kings is very interesting. Do I have to include Kellogg language? What is Kellogg language? Kellogg language is the employer will not only consider somebody who has all the qualifications that I asked for, but the employer will consider all applicants who, because of their background, could potentially qualify. So that is the law. We have to consider not only people with the qualifications we have asked for, like MS plus 2 years, but we have to consider people who could qualify because of their background. Somebody has 20 years of experience, no degree. I still have to consider them. Okay. So the question is the Kellogg language required in ads? The answer is no. No. Kellogg language is not required in the ads. Do we put it? Yes, we do. Why? Because that's just the smarter thing to do, in my opinion. We always put the Kellogg language in the ads. We are always preparing, not for today, but for tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, when the Department of Labor could change its mind. Then what do I do with all those cases that have already been advertised with no Kellogg language and are waiting to be filed or already in the process? Department of Labor is notorious for changing its mind. And they're changing their mind midstream. Okay? So, to answer your question, I'm not aware of any regulation that says you have to put in the Kellogg language. But as a lawyer, I always put it in. Smart thing. Okay? From my understanding, I believe the ad should not be more restrictive than the perm application, but vice versa is okay. Well, no, not really. It's become more complicated. If you look at the latest, you see, you are only looking at the regulations and the frequently asked questions. That doesn't mean anything. You have to look at the Board of Alien Labor Certification Appeals rulings. What do they say? You know, BALCA has actually rejected the frequently asked questions a couple of times, saying that's not the correct law and the Department of Labor is wrong. Okay? So relying on frequently asked questions is not a good idea. The ad can be very generic, not mention education years of experience. Bad idea. There are BALCA rulings that have come down on the side of more specificity. So don't be fooled by that. Okay? That's why we have lawyers, because we do this for a living. In fact, I just ended up yelling at a, not yelling, but at least being very passionate about some very poor advice given by a lawyer to a corporate client of ours. The problem is, you see, In the profession of law, you've got to keep reading. You've got to stay aware of all the latest developments. In immigration law, every day something changes. So the advice these lawyers were giving was a year and a half old. The laws have changed since then. Okay? Or not the laws, but the policy has changed. Now, the client comes back to us and says, well, my other lawyer is saying they are a relatively large company, 300-400 employees, and they have, all of them are pretty much on green cards and H-1s, and, you know, so they're using our firm as well as the other law firm, and they got some very poor advice. And my problem is, when somebody comes back with that kind of advice, how do you answer? It appears that not only am I doing my own work, I'm doing somebody else's work for them. So my advice was, guys, please tell your lawyers to read the latest law, okay? And the law is not contained only in the regulations. It is also contained in decisions. Got to read what the decisions say. So to answer your question, it's not that simple. Don't think that what your idea – I would have agreed with you. If you had asked me, told me this, that the ads can be generic, about a year ago, I would have said, yeah, of course. A year and a half ago, I would have said, sure, you can have a one-line ad with just the job title, where the job location is, and the employer's full name and address. No longer. You've got to be more specific. So, once again, to cut the long story short, Kellogg language is not required, but it's a good way to go if you put it in there. Marrying after asylum, oh, I'm so sorry, I don't know much about asylum cases. Okay? You will have to talk with her lawyer. I'm so sorry, I cannot help you here. Okay, priority date current, but H-1B amendment needed. Well, you see, here is the problem I have with your case. If the employer identification number, FEIN, is the same, there should be no amendment necessary. But if the employers have changed, I'm going to have to ask you to do either a consultation with me, and I will need a whole lot more information, or talk with your own lawyers. Okay? This is not an easy question to answer. I need to know whether or not you actually are in status. If you are not in status, how long have you been out of status? If you've been out of status for more than 180 days, you cannot file 485 without first going outside USA and coming back in. Okay? So it's a difficult question for me to answer. The key here is the federal employer identification number. Well, that's one of the keys. Next question is Sandy 7. Wishing you a happy New Year. Same to you, Sandy. My case is the six-year H-1B term will end April 1st, 2012. Firm was applied under EB2 category in October 2011, received audit, etc., etc. I have approved firm from my previous employer, but they never applied for I-140. You know what? That firm is gone. If the I-140 was not applied for, that firm is over. So you cannot apply for 1 year based upon that firm. Okay. Next question from Anurag Saxena. Parents had green card, went back to India, stayed. Now, should they apply for SB1 or green card again? It looks to me, unless you have a very, very good explanation for why they overstayed, a new green card would be easier because you are a U.S. citizen and you can apply for them. Just because previously your uncle applied and got them the green card does not mean that he has to apply again. You can apply. Okay? And the fact that they previously had a green card should not be a problem. Okay? Super King says, please blog, Rajiv. Can you please blog more often? Two problems. I'm very, very busy. And two, I'm a very slow typist. So what I can do is I will start some kind of a, maybe on YouTube, some kind of a vlog, some kind of a, you know, video log. Maybe that will help. So that will be easier for us, you know. Or maybe we can do this community calls more frequently, once a week or something like that. You know, but blogging, I kind of got tired of it simply because I got busy, and especially in this environment, there's so much going on. And two, because it takes me forever to write something down. Of course, I can dictate it, but then if I dictate it, then I have to go back and read it. It just takes much more time. I'll vlog something. We'll start a video log, okay? Coming back to need IMI, I-485 questions. My priority dates become current. I have following questions. I-140 got approved for myself and my wife but my priority dates are current now. Can I apply for 85 using my I-140 for my family? Why not? Do I need to provide my wife's A number? No. No, don't worry about that. If the employer has some information about her that he hasn't provided, don't worry about it. Just file the 485. Can I travel outside U.S. once we get travel document without having H-1B stamping? Sure. Sure. And you don't automatically change to EAD. That's why I just said to somebody else also, read the Cronin Memorandum. Do a search for Cronin Memorandum on our website. C as in Charlie, R-O, N as in Nancy, I, N as in Nancy, Cronin. It's a memorandum back from the late 80s. Still good law. It tells you, if you have an advanced parole and you travel outside using advanced parole, you are still on H-1. My employer is delaying 485 filing. Our visa application handled in the order 485 application was received. Okay, here's how it works. In order for you to file 485, priority date must be current. You can't even file it before then. Once 485 is filed, there's no guarantee it will be treated in the order received, but that's roughly the way it is. So once 485 is filed, it should be roughly treated or decided in the order it was received. Okay? Now, I'm done with the questions for today. Folks, anybody has a follow-up question based upon what we have just discussed, press star 5 on your phone. Star 5. Follow-up questions only. Press star 5 on your phone. Okay, two questions so far. Three. All right. I am unmuting you in the order you joined the conference. Area code 201. Go ahead, please.
Rajay, this is Sandy. This is H-1B extension beyond 6 years. 3 months left in my case. So do I have any option to get my H-1B extension at this point, beyond 6 years, while my perm is pending?
Not until your perm reaches its one-year anniversary. So you can apply for an H-1 extension 6 months ahead of time, as long as the date you ask the H-1 to begin is the date when 1 year anniversary of perm is over. But if there's a 3 or 4 month gap, you'll have to leave U.S. You can come back afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll be having a 4 month gap, 4 to 5 months. So you suggest to leave the country and come back.
Absolutely. 4 months. Are you from Hyderabad?
Chennai.
Chennai. So it's going to be 4 months out in India. You can go to any other country if you have their visa. You don't have to go to India necessarily.
Okay.
And by the way, you're also under U.S. laws. There is no restriction on you working from outside U.S.
Okay.
If you want to work. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck, Sandy.
Thank you.
Next question, area code 973. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Anand.
Anand, hello.
Hi. This is the third question in your backlog, which I asked first. This is regarding the H-1B amendment. You are mentioning something about, I am already out of status. One more thing what I wanted to know is, I may receive my, EAD or advance parole pretty soon. That is the one thing. And the denial notice that I received is for on December 22nd, we got that denial notice. So does that mean my previously, the amendment, whatever I filed for, is that entirely I'm out of status from that time onwards?
First of all, I don't want you to worry because ultimately this issue is manageable. You're not going to have permanent damage of any kind. So don't lose sleep over it. But I don't think your problem is clear-cut. I think I need to review, or your lawyer should review. Why waste money on somebody like us? If you have a lawyer...
No, actually, I already consulted my lawyer, he's told. But I rely more on you because, as I know, like, you are the best, one of the best.
No, we work very hard at what we do, and, you know, we stay on top of everything that's going on. I'll be happy to give you a consultation. If you just send me an email to help@immigration.com, help, H-E-L-P, at immigration.com. That's my personal email address. Just go ahead and drop me an email. I will arrange for our office to set up a call for you. I'll have to review all your paperwork. So, and I am, you know, I will be able to fit you in by next Thursday or so. I know that they are right now scheduling me for next Wednesday. Okay?
Okay. Do I need to appeal for this or not? I mean, still I have like another 30 days?
Don't worry. Let me take a look. Appeal, if you know, appeal, go ahead and file an appeal if you can. You know, because if by the time I get to the consultation it's too late, you will lose the right to appeal. So, yes.
If
there is an appeal necessary, go ahead and file the darn thing, okay? Because you can always withdraw the appeal. That's not the end of the world. But I really want to take a look at your case carefully. I'm very methodical. I like to sit down, go over everything piece by piece by piece, and make sure I'm not missing anything. Almost like a doctor's work, you know? We look over everything very, very carefully, and sometimes people even get irritated because I'm so thorough in looking over things. I just want to make sure that we're not missing anything. I think there is an issue for a problem. There is a potential for a problem here. Because, you know, again, the good news is even when you have issues like this, sometimes you can argue during adjustment of status that this is a de minimis issue, or it is, de minimis means very small issue. They can forgive it. Or it's a technical violation, which the regulations allow USCIS to forgive during AOS processing. So, you know, there are things that we could help you do, but at the moment, I just want to make sure there is no issue. I am very reluctant to spend your money. If you are, you know, if it's possible, make sure you get together with your lawyer, go over everything. But if you're not comfortable, let me take a look at it. I will see what I come up with, okay?
Okay. One more final question, sir. That is, like, if I get my EAD and advance parole, if I go out and come back, that time, like, I will be no more considered for that?
First of all, that's neither going to help nor hurt you. That's not going to help or hurt you. If, however, you leave USA and you re-enter using H-1 visa, that can help you with subsequent 485 filing. But don't do anything without first letting me take a look at your case.
Okay. All right, sir.
Reserve your questions for when I have taken a look at your case. And when you write to me, remind me that I had said I will need at least 30 minutes of conversation time. I mean, no, that's not, I take separate time to review the paper, but just say that I had said that I need a 30-minute consultation. Normally we have 15-minute consultation, that's all we need. But here, reserve all your questions so that I can answer them all in our conversation.
All right. Thank
but
you.
Don't do anything until I've taken a look at your case.
But appeal, I should go ahead
appeal
and do that.
You should, because if we are, you know, if I'm not going to able to be able to get to your case until X number of days, let's just make sure that at least we are protecting all your rights. And here, filing an appeal has no negative point. We can always withdraw the appeal if it's not needed.
Okay.
But
okay.
I don't want
Thank
you to worry.
You.
I think it's manageable. If there's nothing here that I'm afraid of.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Last question from folks who have posted. Area code 208. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ashish. I have the follow-up regarding the F2 versus L1.
Haji.
What I wanted to ask was, like, is there a possibility that I can come on F2 and then work in U.S. for an Indian company based out in India and then get the payroll in Indian rupees in my Indian bank account?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, there's no. I'm not aware of any specific law on this issue, but my concern is, since U.S. employment on on, let me rephrase that. Employment on U.S. soil could itself become objectionable no matter who you work for.
Okay.
I can't say that that's the law, but that is my instinct.
Okay. Okay, and another thing is, like, you know, when... Yeah, go ahead.
It's best not to do that, probably.
Okay. Okay, another thing is, like, when I was asking you about the L-1B visa, what I wanted to ask is, can I come on F-2 and then get a change of status from F-2 to L-1B on the U.S. soil?
You can, but if it is imminent, if it is going to happen right away, I would rather you don't, because F-2 has the same kind of issue. It's a non-work visa. The form asks you, do you intend to work in USA? And you say no. And then you come and you immediately change to L-1. So if you're going to convert to L-1, you should not have a preconceived intention to do so. If you enter and within 60 days you convert, there can be other problems.
Okay, so that 60-day, so does that 60-day rule apply after I come to the U.S. soil, or does that apply from the date I got the F-2 visa? So my F-2 visa was stamped on my passport in the December 1st week, but I will not come until March.
It is from the date you enter U.S.
Okay, so you advise that I should wait for like 60 days and then file for the L-1 probably, right?
Probably, yes.
All right. But I can still apply it for the change of status. The change of status is still is possible from F-2 to any other sort of visa, right?
Oh, that is no problem. That is definitely allowed, yes.
All right. Okay.
And how much time does it take?
Are bhai, ye kaun bol pada beech mein?
Oh, I am also in the, you know, in that same line. I was just wondering, you know, how much time does it take for change of status from F2 to any other status like H1 or L1?
L1, so you can do premium processing, na? In 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you got your answer.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions, guys?
Nope. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Oh, I guess I have two more questions. Area code 404, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. My question is number 18. You said you wanted to know my case a little better.
Okay, remind me what your case is.
Yeah, basically, my priority date is...
Your wife. You asked your question, ke wife ki A or B company. I wasn't sure how that works. I mean,
No. That's not me. It's question 18.
What is the question? Remind me.
The priority date is current now, and my company lawyers were looking to file my 485, and then they realized that I needed an H-1B amendment.
Oh, the department being different, right?
Just the department. Now, again, this is not a consulting job. I work for a direct employer.
Let me explain something to you.
Uh-huh.
Let us say I get hired by the University of Nebraska.
Uh-huh.
And I start working for Department of Medicine as a biomedical researcher. A year down the line, I get transferred over to, or I change over to Department of Chemistry, still working as a biomedical researcher.
Okay.
I would argue that's no problem. Because my employer is still the University of Nebraska, not the department. Department doesn't have its own employer identification number.
Okay.
So what I needed to look at was, what is the distinction between who controlled you earlier and who controls you now?
What they've told me so far was, like, the name of my company, the first, it's the same name. One ended with corporation, and the new department comes under NA, which I'm guessing is North America.
No.
But it's the same company.
The problem is not the name. The problem is legal entity.
Okay.
See, look at the name of our office. Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. PC means professional corporation.
Okay.
Rajiv, the individual, and Rajiv, the corporation, are two different people.
Okay.
So by the same token, it's not the name. Our firm has my name on it, but it's not me. My bank account is not the firm's bank account. The firm's bank account is not mine. I wish it was. Lots of money there. But, you know, it's not the same thing. We'll have to look at the corporate entity. And if your lawyers are competent, I would follow their advice. The problem is, if there is a question of being out of status for more than 180 days, then 485 can be denied.
Okay. Now, what they told me was, the amendment and filing the 485 are two different entities. One can run parallel to the other, and they don't have a relationship, as far as I understood from them.
You have misunderstood. No lawyer would ever say that if they have thought this thing thoroughly. Because how can you file a 485 and hope for success if you have been out of status for more than 180 days? How are they not related?
I'm assuming they're going by when I took this new job. It was late October last year, so that puts it a little over.
Then you are very safe because Section 245K protects you. Then you are very safe, and if they file an amendment that has no bearing on your 485, then their logic makes perfect sense.
Okay. And what's the amendment typically? Do they have to file an entirely new H-1B, or is it just...
An amendment is a misnomer. Amendment, extension, transfer, new H-1. All of them involve exactly the same paperwork.
So when would I have to get a new visa stamped if I leave the country?
You shouldn't have to. See, this is such a minor thing that USCIS should not create a problem about it. But, you know, worst-case scenario, you've got your 485 pending. You ultimately get your AP approval. If they decline, if they give you the H-1, but they tell you to go outside for visa stamping, you can go, and if the visa stamping gets delayed, just come back on your AP, no problem.
Okay. And one final question on this is... do the priority date, my priority date for when I file the perm, that's been controlling everything so far. But now that I'm applying for the 485, is there a new queue that starts for the green card?
I answered that question, but I'll repeat it. It bears repeating. You cannot even file 485 until priority date is current. We all know that. Once the priority date is current, we file the 485. I filed mine today. You filed yours tomorrow. Is it 100% sure that I will get it before you do? No. But roughly speaking, they should take it in the order received.
Okay. I guess my question was, does it stop if the dates go back?
Oh, yes. What happens is, you will not get your green card if the dates slip back. Okay? Do they stop adjudication? It depends. If they have enough time, they continue adjudicating these cases. In fact, you may want to Google the phrase pre-adjudication. So what happens is, if they have time...
Can you say that word again?
Pre-adjudication.
Okay.
Yeah. If they have time, they will pre-adjudicate the case and they'll complete the file and they'll say pre-adjudicate it and keep it. So then what it means is, all we are waiting for is the visa date to become current. The moment it becomes current... Clank, they send it for a visa number, and you've got your green card. The second
possibility is... So if it stays current for the next few months, then it just goes along the normal cycle?
Yes. If the dates remain current, they keep processing it, and you get your green card very quickly.
And how much of a time frame is that typically?
I do not know the answer to that question. There are many, many variables. People who've gotten their earliest 485 I've gotten is about 25 days in the last few years. The latest, I've got somebody who's 45 is pending for 4 years.
Okay.
But typical life cycle, I would say, is months, not years.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Good luck. You're welcome. Okay. This is the last amongst the posted questions. I guess this is Philadelphia. Area code 215. Area code 215-815-820. Okay, I'll leave the line open. Folks, anybody has any question, go ahead and press star 5. Anybody has any question, press star 5. press star 5. Any question? Press star 5 because whoever has his hand up or her hand up, that's the only question I would answer. Okay, so we've got only one more question. Somebody had their hand up, then it went down. If you press star 5 twice, your hand will go down. Okay, wow. All right, let's do this. You know what? Hands keep going up and down. I think people are confused. Let's do this. Okay, I've got three hands up right now. Three hands up right now. Four now. I've got area code 615, who's the first in the queue. 214, who's second in queue. 502, who's third in queue. And another area code 215, who is the fourth. These are the only hands I have up right now. Now there's a fifth one from area code 907. Area code 215 just went off again. 215-820. Press star 5 again if you have a question. But if you press star 5 too many times, you go off. Okay, now you're back on. Guys, these are the only five questions I'm going to answer. I'm going to do no more calls because I have to go, okay? So starting with area code 907. Ma'am, sir, go ahead.
Hello, sir. I'm calling for a relative of mine who came to the U.S. 10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago, on an L1A visa. Eventually filed the 485, got denied the 485 because of being out of status for more than 180 days. My question here is, I did a little bit of research and found the form OMB, EOIR-42B, the application for cancellation of removal and adjustment of status. Something we can file with the immigration court or not?
Is your relative in deportation proceedings right now?
No, sir, and that is probably part of my question there.
Okay. Well, remember, anything that says EOIR, EOIR stands for Executive Office for Immigration Review, which means the judges, courts. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Anything that says EOIR is only relevant when it comes to immigration courts. If he's not in deportation, there's no question of an EOIR form being used. Now, this situation is complicated enough, you should not fool around with it. You should get yourself a lawyer, have them review the case, and then make a recommendation. Immigration law is so complex that even people who practice it for a living can make mistakes. There is absolutely no way you are going to be able to figure this out by yourself. Not unless you're going to spend a month or so of about good 4 or 5 hours a day researching and understanding the law.
Yep.
Okay? Go get yourself, get yourself a lawyer. Don't do it yourself.
Very good. Can I email you at help@immigration.com?
You can. What I will need is the following information. Number one, what date he entered USA.
Okay.
Number two, till what date was he working on his L1A, and when did he stop working on L1A? Once he stopped working on L1A, what did he do? And finally, details about when the 45 was filed, when it was denied. These four items of information.
Very good. Okay. I will email that information to you, sir, and I appreciate your help and your time.
My pleasure. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Next question, 615. Go ahead, please. Area code 615. 615-249. Okay, I'll leave you unmuted. Go on to the next one. Area code 214-281.
Hey, Rajiv. I'm Ajitesh on the side.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Rajiv. I actually came to India, for my visa stamping and went to Chennai consulate today. And I received 221G blue form.
Right.
So I wanted to check with you, In US, I applied for my green card and I got my labor approved, and then I filed for I-140.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there a way? I mean, assuming my visa get denied, is there a way I can, you know, retain my status of labor and continue with my green card process staying in India?
Absolutely. Absolutely, no question about it. This is very clear law. Let us say, heaven forbid, your H-1 is declined. For example, you cannot get N client letter. I'm just taking an example, okay? Your H-1 is declined.
Mm-hmm.
Now you say, you know what? I have another job offer in India, you know, which is, I don't know, second only to, I don't know, Mr. Birla's job. It's a great job. I want to stay here, and I want to work until I get my green card. I don't want to fool around with H-1s anymore.
Okay.
You can definitely keep your green card going in USA as long as the employer has the intention to continue the green card and hire you, and you have the intention ultimately to come and join them.
Okay. And do I have to continue with the same employer in India, or I can change my employer?
It certainly makes for a very good case if you continue with the same employer. Because if I was a USCIS or a consular officer, I will say, sir, you claim that you have a permanent job in USA. If you had a permanent job, what are you doing here in India? Who is doing that job in your absence? I mean,
okay.
There could be many answers. I'm not suggesting what is the correct answer for you, but there could be many answers. One answer could be, you didn't give me an H-1 visa. What do you want me to do? Okay? And
okay.
I'm really sick and tired of dealing with these stupid H-1 visas. I just want to get a green card and go. Who's doing the job? That's the employer's problem. They probably have my job shared between four people or five people. I don't know what they're doing. You know, something like that.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, I came to India for my wedding. So how can I, how will it be possible for me to add my wife to my green card?
No problem. Once your I-140 is filed, your wife's name will be mentioned. But, you know, anywhere along the line, anywhere,
okay.
Even 2 days before you go for your green card interview in India, you can add your wife to your case.
Okay. So, Malab, with the same application, I mean, same labor and same application,
yeah,
everything
yeah.
I can...
Absolutely.
Okay.
No problem at all. The only requirement in law is, in order for a spouse to come with or through you, you have to be married before your green card is approved.
Okay.
No problem.
So is the process remain the same when I'm in India, or is there any difference in the process?
It's a little different process. It's called consular processing. Yahan pe usko adjustment of status bolte.
Okay. I mean, like for the whole green card process, is it the same?
No.
Or?
I labor cert I-140 process remains 100% the same.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
Good luck. Going back to area code 615, are you there? Okay. I'll leave the line open. Area code 502, go ahead, please. 502.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. This is Raj.
Hi, Raj.
My H-1B is maxing out in April this year, like finishing 6 years, including all the travel period as well outside U.S. My employer has started the green card processing. The prevailing wage determination returned, and you know, it's saying that the salary should be like 135K or around 130K, and my salary is actually 70K, and I am in a low cost city, like I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. So, what happens in this scenario?
Well, there are many things that can go wrong. Your lawyers can best advise you. One of the things that could potentially go wrong is that Department of Labor has misclassified you. For example, are you an IT guy?
Yeah, I am a project manager in IT.
Okay. If you're a project manager, the most common mistake Department of Labor can make is that instead of classifying you as a techie, they could classify you as a computer manager.
Okay.
Information systems managers' salaries are much higher than the salaries of techies. So, you know, I don't know what happened, but this is always a messy situation. Once you get a determination from the Department of Labor either you have to reapply for the prevailing wage, making your job description clearer, or you have to fight it out with them, or get a private wage survey and show it to them why they are wrong. There's several different options. Your lawyers can help you decide, but it's always going to be messy, no question about it.
Because 130K is like way off the chart for, you know, this location, because it's completely wrong. It shouldn't be more than even...
Yeah, Louisville is not that expensive a city, so I'm surprised. But again, since I don't know exactly what happened, I cannot really comment about it.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry. I can't help much. Good luck. Last call of the day, guys. Area code 215820.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Yeah. So my question is, like, you know, if a GC holder can a GC holder work in two full-time jobs simultaneously?
Once you have your green card, you can work on two jobs, 20 jobs, or no job at all.
Okay, what if my previous employer knows that I'm working for other things because I'm managing that?
Look.
Okay, so no, you can work more than two jobs. That's,
yes, but let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. When did you get your green card approval?
2 years back.
2 years back. You can do whatever the heck you choose. There's nothing the employer can do against you.
Oh, okay.
Not in immigration law. They can, if you have a contract with them, they could sue you. But as far as immigration law is concerned, there's nothing they can do.
Oh, okay. Okay. So they said that, you know, you should not take another employment. That's what they said.
You can play this recording for them, and I will give this message to your employer. Stop being silly. A green card is not slavery. It is not indentured service. Once you have your green card, you can go, leave, do whatever you want. No question about it.
Okay. Okay. So I was having, thank you so much, Raj. And one other question is regarding pre-adjudication.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once you have pre-adjudication, what does it mean? So your status is of a GC holder.
Pre-adjudication simply means that, look, we don't have green card numbers right now, but at least we have looked at your case and it's approved already. But we can't give you green card.
Already? Okay.
Yeah, we cannot give you the green card.
But
you have the case approved.
Yeah, because I have so many questions about this. So it means, suppose you are on H-1 and it's pre-adjudicated, means you are no longer in H-1?
You are still on H-1. Nothing has changed.
You are married. Can you get your wife on H-1?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So, but what if they stamp your passport, pre-adjudicated, and stamp your passport?
That is different. They only stamp your passport once they have already approved your green card. And then this is what the stamp says. Approved for... approved for lawful permanent residence, temporary proof of I-551, something like that.
Yes, yes. But my question is, if it's stamped, then you are no longer an H-1, right?
Correct.
Okay, so once it's stamped, there is no longer an H-1, then you cannot... So
actually, it is prior to then. Once the I-485 is approved, you are no longer an H-1.
No longer an H-1. Okay, but in certain cases, so USA has said that, okay, they approved it. Okay, we shouldn't have approved. Your case was not approval at the time. We want to correct the date. So what does that mean later? So still you are approved, right? You're a permanent resident.
I don't understand that. I have never seen that situation before. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So, but once you have a 551 stamp, then it means that you're no longer on H-1.
That is for sure, 100%.
100%. That's what I would like to know, sir. And regarding the jobs, is there any time you need to wait after you get your green card to sign?
I have an entry on my blog on this. Go read it. Very lengthy discussion. Yeah.
Oh, can you tell me that address, the URL, Rajiv? I would not bother you much.
Go to immigration.com and on the top there is an entry for my blogs. Go to my blogs and read up. It's going to take you a while to find it. That's the best I can do for you.
Oh, okay. So I'm free to work for it. Okay. So thank you so much, Rajiv.
Anytime. Good luck, guys. Good talking with all of you, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye now.